The deadline for Iran's nuclear deal of June 30 is fast approaching. Tough negotiations are taking place to come out with a text. A negotiated solution to a 10-year-old deadlock is almost in sight. And yet, major officials have made statements that may torpedo the talks. An example, the U.S. President Barack Obama. He said in an interview before a summit with the Persian Gulf Arab monarchies in Washington, in which four leaders actually abstained from that, that Iran is a state sponsor of terror. Iran's civilian nuclear file, subject of this edition of the debate.
In an interview with Saudi Arabia's UK-based paper Al-Sharq Al-Awsat, the U.S. president gave Arab countries every right to be deeply concerned about Iran's activities in the region. Obama accused Tehran of supporting what he called violent proxies inside the borders of other countries. In reaction, Iran's foreign minister rejected Obama's comments as baseless. Mohammad Javad Zarif said claims regarding Iran's role in the region are just a repetition of the previous quote, unfounded allegations to appease Washington's allies. Zarif reiterated that Iran's policy is based on friendship and boosting cooperation with regional countries to improve security. Divisions have recently surfaced between the U.S. and its Persian Gulf Arab allies over a possible nuclear deal between Iran and the P5+1 group. Arab countries have on several occasions said they consider any deal with Iran as a threat, arguing that Iran's influence will grow further in the region as a result of a possible deal.
U.S. policy is operating on two tracks. On the one hand, it is dealing with Iran, attempting to work out some understanding to end the confrontational situation and to solicit Iranian support to stabilize the governments in Afghanistan and Iraq. On the other hand, Washington is closely allied with Israel and Saudi Arabia.
In a sign of growing tensions, the leaders of Saudi Arabia and Bahrain have backed out of the Camp David talks near Washington on Thursday. They will be sending their crown princes to the meeting instead. The leaders of Oman and the United Arab Emirates are skipping the summit for medical reasons. The emirs of Kuwait and Qatar will be attending the summit. The U.S. seeks to reassure the Arab monarchs of its continued support, even if it reaches a comprehensive nuclear agreement with Iran.
The bigger question is, how far will the U.S. go to satisfy the Saudis? Will they impose conditions that are unacceptable to Iran in order to satisfy the Saudis? Or will they be able to develop an independent policy which satisfies the interests of the great majority of the United States, which is reach a nuclear accord with the Iranian government and allow the region to proceed in peace?
Obama's allegations against Iran come as Washington's regional allies, as well as Turkey, have been the main funders and supporters of terrorist groups in Syria and Iraq. Many analysts say Washington has always pursued double standards in the region mainly for its own interests. They say the U.S. on the one hand claims to be fighting terrorism, and on the other is providing terrorists with training and sophisticated military equipment. Experts say such policies in general run contrary to Washington's claims of being serious about eliminating the roots of terrorism.
Well, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Debate. Journalist and political analyst Hafsakar Mustafa joins us from London. We have President of the Middle East Research Center, Richard Hellman, who joins us from Washington. I'd like to welcome you both. Let me start with you first, Hafsakar Mustafa. We have a little over a month left for the June 30th deadline. It's fast approaching. You have intense negotiations that are taking place between the P5+1 countries to a 10-year-old problem that at this point it looks like there's some kind of solution or agreement that may be in sight. And then you have the U.S. President Barack Obama in an interview saying, leveling these harsh accusations against Iran, that Iran is a state sponsor of terrorism, sounding a lot like George Bush did when he expressed his views to Iran. Why do you think Barack Obama would make these types of statements at this very sensitive juncture?
Well, I think there are two reasons why he's made such belligerent statements, really. One is to appeal to the Gulf monarchy partners, on the eve of the the summit, but also I think it's to appease the other ally in the region, which is Benjamin Netanyahu. Now, we remember that the Israeli premier got a very warm welcome in the US Congress and actually rebuffed the US president, humiliating actually the elected president of the United States, and made very harsh statements against Iran, as usual, really as a distraction from his heinous policies against the Palestinian people. So he's been using Iran for the past 20 years, if anything, to distract from what Israel is doing in Palestine. And of course, we've seen that Barack Obama has just echoed those very same sentiments in order to appeal to both the Saudi monarchy, but also the Israeli occupying state. So we can see that Barack Obama, rather than actually attempt to engage in a fruitful and peaceful negotiations with a major player in the Middle East, is actually playing up and trying to appease probably the two worst regimes in the region.
Richard Hartman, you would think that Barack Obama could have done this in private, maybe not have said these types of statements in public when it comes to at least the push by the U.S. president regarding Iran's nuclear deal, a possible deal with Iran on its civilian nuclear program. Do you agree with our guest there, Hafsakar Mustafa?
No, I think that if anything, the president, President Obama, said too little. He should have called out the regime in Tehran for their atrocious human rights record, the thousands being executed publicly in town squares in Tehran and elsewhere, and American Christian minister in jail in Iran for no reason, and not to mention Iran's genocidal threats to annihilate, eliminate Israel, and to attack America. There's a broad record of this Iran regime, this Tehran regime, which does not even represent the best of the Iranian or Persian history and culture and educational levels. It's atrocious. The president should have called Iran out much more strongly, and I think we're going to hear more of those strong expressions of distaste and revulsion for what the Iran regime represents from the United States Senate and the United States Congress this month and next, as the administration tries to cobble together some kind of an agreement. Sadly, the agreement only deals, if it deals with anything, it deals with nuclear weapons development. Even that has no clear parameters yet, but it does not deal with these other illegal actions, illegal under right. international criminal law, of threatening genocide and violating human rights and supporting terrorists and dictators like the dictator of Damascus, Bashar al-Assad, who has killed more than a quarter of a million of his own people and has millions of his people as refugees, either internally or externally from Syria. If anything, in a word,
okay.
President Barack Obama was too mild in what he said about the Tehran regime.
Very well. Hafsakar Mustafa, I know you have a reaction, but I'm really curious as to why Richard Hellman would level those accusations, which for the most part are false, against Iran, and then I'm assuming by default he's supporting these Arab regimes that are suppressing their own people.
I'll tell you
but first,
why.
Hold on. I'll come to you, Richard Hellman.
They're not
Hafsakar
false.
Mustafa, you go ahead. Richard Hellman, hold on. Let's get a reaction
those.
From a guest in London. Go ahead.
Are you
Hafsakar
Mustafa?
Yes,
or do you have your thumb on the scale?
If I may, I think if you're going to make level accusations on human rights abuses, I think it would be fair to start with your major ally. Saudi Arabia is hardly a beacon of democracy and a place where human rights is respected. So I think if you're going to be fair in those accusations, at least start with your principal ally. Actually, if anything, both your closest allies, first with Saudi Arabia, given its blatant violations of human rights abuses, but also Israel, which is in violation again of numerous UN violations. So I think the idea that Barack Obama's words were actually subdued is rather farcical. Equally, I think we can also imagine that in the spirit of fairness, we could have the Iranian leadership actually level similar accusations, given that in the US, not a week goes by without young black children and teenagers being gunned down. Now, the statistics show that when you're a black American, the chances that you're going to be chucked in prison for no reason, custodial sentences are a given if you're black, even if you've committed a crime similar to one made by a white citizen. So I think what does hanging in Iran have to do with the talks that are currently taking place on the nuclear issue? If you're bringing in human rights abuses, I think it's fair to say that all players in the region are in violation of basic human rights law. And actually, America, given its heinous record across the world, be it in Vietnam throwing napalm against civilians, being in Iraq where it's used depleted uranium, given in the US itself where it actually has no respect for a good chunk of its black citizens, I think that you'd have to start at home first and foremost. Now, coming back to the Iranian negotiations, I think that these accusations are very unfair. They're uncalled for, and obviously they don't make a climate conducive to any interesting peace talks. Obviously, if you start a conversation by actually accusing your partner in a conversation of blatant, unfairly in such a way, I don't think you're favouring a climate for negotiations. And what Barack Obama is obviously doing is trying to appeal to his partners in the region. And they, obviously, given their record, are really not the best players in the team.
Richard Hellman, go ahead.
Well, obviously, two wrongs do not make a right. And as a proponent of respect for international norms of human rights, we must call upon all nations, including the Gulf nations as well as Iran, to do more for the protection of internationally recognized norms of human rights. But having spent a lot of time in the Middle East, including a period of time as a consultant in years in Israel, and having had a long history of involvement with government and private enterprise and think tanks in the United States, there really are only two really free democracies that have been mentioned in this conversation to date. Those are the United States and Israel. And by a free democracy, I mean where someone can stand up in the town square of the capital or any major city and say whatever they want without fear of death, destruction, imprisonment, and so forth, as is true in Tehran and in so many places. But in Jerusalem, in Tel Aviv, in Washington, D.C., in Baltimore, in New York City, people have the freedom to vote, the freedom to assemble, the freedom to speak, and the freedom to change things. So your guest from London rolling everything together into a big hodgepodge saying everybody is terrible and everybody is wrong shows that she lacks any discrimination of determining what is a real free functioning democracy with respect for the rights of all and what is not. For example, in Israel, the Christians, the Muslims, the Baha'is who are persecuted shamelessly in Iran where they originated.
And what does this have to do with the topic of today?
And all of these peoples, and I'm not done yet, excuse me, and all of these races.
You can jump in anytime you want.
Peacefully and harmoniously, and if they have any grievances, they can have demonstrations, they can have elections, they can have their candidates put forward for the parliament
in the United States, other elected offices.
So this is a big difference. This is a big difference from the regime in Tehran.
Let's get a reaction from Hafsa Qamar Mustafa.
Which is busy locking people up
Let her have her say
executing
here.
Them.
Go ahead, Hafsatkar Mustafa.
Well, yes, I think I need to mention, seeing as the other guest has actually decided to be the mouthpiece of the Israeli government, I think it's fair to remind Mr. Hellman that last summer, actually, over 2,500 Palestinian civilians were slaughtered, and about half of those civilians were actually children. Now, all international bodies actually condemned Israeli action, and I can't for the life of me actually go back to any time in the past 30 years where the state of Iran has done anything similar. If anything, Iran has never used depleted uranium on anyone. Iran hasn't used white phosphorus on any civilians. Iran hasn't actually contributed to any violation of international law. So again, both the words of Barack Obama and somebody like Hellman are obviously clearly wrong when it comes to demonizing Iran, clearly, purely for the purpose of appeasing the Zionist members of Congress, who humiliated their elected president. A president elected by the American people was humiliated in favor of a foreign leader. Now, that's unprecedented in any country in the world, whereby people, policymakers of a country, actually humiliate their own president in favor of a foreign leader and gave him warm rounds of applause and humiliated their president because, simply because he represents the interests of a very small minority within the US that actually supports the one terrorist state and the one state that is illegally occupying the land of Palestine and has been doing so for over 60 years. Now, we know for a fact that Israel is in violation of numerous UN resolutions. That is, again, that is a fact. Now, of course, we're digressing from the original topic, which was UN, which was the US-Iran negotiations on Iran.
Too many false. Very well.
Let's take a quick time out. We got to squeeze in the viewer comments here, and we'll get back to the subject of the debate. Hold on to your thoughts, Richard Hellman. Viewer comments right now, and momentarily we'll be back with the debate.
When has the U.S. not been anti-Iran? Only when Shah Pahlavi was their puppet? Obama made the anti-Iran comment just to please Arab countries, particularly Saudi Arabia. It's a reality that Iran supporting terrorists, even there is Press TV to sponsor terrorism. What Obama said is absolutely true. Iran has created this mess and chaos in the Middle East. Iran should step back and stop interfering in the Arab region. Please ask Obama who created Al-Qaeda and ISIS and who is arming, funding the terrorist regime of Israel. In the eyes of Persian Gulf Arab states, Iran is a terrorist state, but Israel, which has killed hundreds of Palestinians, is peaceful. How many Palestinians are killed by Iran? Obama's comment shouldn't be taken seriously by the Iranians because it has been the stance of the U.S. government since the revolution in Iran. What would he say to Saudi Arabia and Qatar, who arm Syria rebels and ISIS? Iran is not falling in lockstep with U.S. demands and, as such, must pay for its insubordination. The U.S., Israeli, Saudi cabals use their favorite propagandist term, terrorist, to justify their military intentions. Unfortunately for them, Iran can defend itself and may not just offer its bended knee. It's always, in the end of it, just about money and greed. Nothing to do with morality and human rights. Just a stupid money. Simply because it doesn't comply with the U.S., and the U.S. is a puppeteer that only likes puppets. Dancing to Zionist tune, what else?
Okay, those were some of the viewer comments. Now, Richard Hellman, I know that you're not a fan of Saudi Arabia. You're not a fan of Arab countries in general, because I looked at your website, CPAC, or if I'm pronouncing it correctly. But let's take a look at this summit of Persian Gulf countries supposed to take place in Washington. Four of the leaders are not attending. Actually, we found out that the Bahraini king is going to be attending some kind of horse race with the Queen of Britain. So there you go for the respect that these Arab leaders have for Obama. Why do you think that this is being viewed as a snub to Obama, even though these countries are supposed to be, allies of the U.S.?
Well, sadly, and I say sadly and tragically, this not only is being viewed as a snub to the president, to the White House, and to Secretary Kerry here in Washington and in New York in the United States, but in France and other international media, they see clearly that these Gulf states, like Israel and like some other nations, do not see this White House as being effective or principled in their negotiations in Lausanne and elsewhere, which were intended originally, according to President Obama, to put an end to the development of nuclear weapons by the regime in Tehran, the Iran Ayatollahs and those who work for them, and the military and civilian forces that are all in line. These nuclear weapons are not even the most important problem. The most important problem are the threats of genocide, the threats to annihilate Israel, the threats to eliminate America, and also the gross violation of ordinary norms inside Iran, where the Iranians are executing more people,
executions, public executions with children present. In closing, Hafsatar Mustafa, these statements being made by Barack Obama, do you think that it may have actually torpedoed the talks that are supposed to reach a deadline by June 30th? You got 30 seconds. Hafsatar Mustafa.
Can I speak? Go ahead, Hafsatar Mustafa. I just need to add, I think the Arab leaders who have actually decided not to go and have humiliated once again the US president, I actually, on this particular point, I probably agree with them. I think, we know, why show respect for a president that isn't even respected by his own people and by his own Congress? So I think on that point is right. Can I just tell Mr. Hellman before we leave that actually Iran, 3,000 years, Israel, 66 years. I think any sane person would know where to put their money on. So when you think about it, I think the US really should consider very closely where it stands in regards to Iran and actually ditch Israel, which really is on a course, like most colonial states, it really has an expiry date. And I think the US should look into that very closely.
Thank you very much for that. Journalist and political analyst Hafsatar Mustafa there from London. And thank you, President of the Middle East Research Center, Richard Hellman, spoke to us from Washington. Thanks so much for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitavoy and the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.